the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield and Company.
I wake up this morning and we see the thing turn up. Internet gone mad.
Respect the drip, Karen.
We got a problem.
Dan, I only signed up to get a check. I'm finna be checking out.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company on your Tuesday afternoon. Cofield joining you shortly from Boise, where he's with the UNLV basketball team taking on the Broncos up at, I believe they're calling it Extra Mile Arena now, which is just a shame because it used to be Taco Bell Arena, and then you could call it the Big Chalupa, which was way, way better. Ryan McHale here with Adam Candy. Cofield up shortly. A lot of news here on Tuesday. NFL coaching hires continue to come down the pipe. Some interesting names. Some guys I didn't expect. Especially with my own team. Ryan, I don't know if I included this in the information I sent you before the show, but today we're going to be talking about the New York Yankees. We're going to be talking about Beavis and Butthead. And then eventually we're going to get to talking about the NFL, because I want to start talking about the judges that I know. I know Aaron Judge. You know Aaron Judge?
I know Aaron Judge.
You know Aaron Judge.
I know Judge Judy.
Judge Judy, but she's not... Don't you get ahead of me here.
Okay.
Judge Judy is a name that wouldn't have surprised anybody. I mean, she makes $44 million or something like that.
She was never leaving her cushy job.
No. I mean, she's only a contract extension for Judge Judy.
Right.
But Aaron Judge is an outfielder for the New York Yankees. I'm familiar with him. Yeah. He's a large man.
Yeah.
He's well-known in New York.
Could have hit home runs?
He could. And then there's Mike Judge.
Yeah.
He created Beavis and Butthead, didn't he?
And one of the greatest movies to ever exist in Office Space.
Oh, my goodness.
And Idiocracy, if we're being honest. I mean, two of the real seminal movies of our generation.
So Mike Judge is a pretty well-known guy.
I'd actually put Mike Judge above Aaron Judge.
You know what? Even though I'm a Yankees fan, I can't argue with that. But, apparently we're going to start talking NFL coaches here, and it gets a little different.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
Who in the holy hell is Joe Judge?
He's a former linebacker.
No. He's none of these things that you're about to mention. His name is New York Giants coach. Who in the hell is Joe Judge?
Former linebacker coach of Birmingham Southern. Adam Candy, come on.
The former linebacker coach of Birmingham.
Yeah,
Southern.
Man, you should be happy.
Who in the hell is not Joe Judge?
I mean, if we're talking New York.
I am a New York Giants fan, and I have not enjoyed anything good for a while. Oh, he's up on the TV right now. Apparently, that's Joe Judge.
Hanging out next to Bill Belichick.
He's another one of the hoodie mafia.
Yeah.
Standing right there next to Darth Bill. Now, apparently Joe Judge is the new head coach of the New York Giants. He's 38 years old. He was the special teams coach and wide receivers coach for the New England Patriots up until now. He also worked under Nick Saban at Alabama as an assistant to the assistant GM. I don't know. Something that was not a big deal.
Assistant to the assistant regional manager.
He was the Dwight Schrute of Alabama. So who in the hell is Joe Judge? Apparently he's who Dave Gettleman, the GM of the Giants, chose over Matt Rhule, who turned around both the Temple and the Baylor programs as the new head coach of the New York Giants. And we're going to get to Matt Rhule in just a moment. But, Ryan, I have another question that I hadn't mentioned before that I want to get to. Who in the hell is Joe Judge?
You all right, buddy? I mean, it could be worse. It could have Gase. Just be happy you're a Giants fan. I would rather have a guy that I know nothing about in, let me check his name, Joe Judge, rather than, you know, wild-eyed, coked-out Adam Gase.
Fair enough. The Adam Gase introductory press conference is one of the seminal moments in the NFL of 2019.
For sure.
No question about it. He looked either shocked by the smell of the back of his hand or potentially on some sort of powerful narcotic.
Right. Yeah. He was skiing.
Okay. He might have been. Joe Judge comes as part of the Bill Belichick coaching tree. And for as good as Bill Belichick has been as a head coach in the NFL, just take a little walk down Belichick coaching tree lane and see what he has produced. Are you happy with Charlie Weiss? Are you happy with Romeo Crennel? Do you think that Matt Patricia has done a good job? Did you enjoy stint number one in Denver of Josh McDaniels, who apparently has lost the stench and is now a good head coaching candidate again? What have I missed along the road here about guys who came from the Bill Belichick coaching tree?
It is the quintessential definition of, I don't want to say white privilege, but Belichick privilege, which is essentially white privilege in this case. It's the give him the old college try. I'm hopeful about this young man. He's got something. I see something inside him. He's got spunk. I don't know what they were saying in that room, but you know it was different variations of that. It was stretching. It was trying to find a reason, Gettleman and co., to make a pick, which is a pick that we're all laughing at.
Baylor went 11-3 this year and lost the Sugar Bowl. The Patriots had a wide receivers coach at the same time named Joe Judge. God, I'm scratching my head here. I'm thinking about, like, what was the one thing that the Patriots were really, really bad at this year? Was it catching the ball? Was it wide receivers? Was it anyone getting anything done for Tom Brady? I'm done. I can't go any farther with this. Let's go on to Matt Rhule. Matt Rhule gets the job with the Carolina Panthers. Billionaire David Tepper gives him a 7-year, $60 million contract with incentives that could go up to $70 million a year. And I believe you were the one who pointed out that that is a similar salary to a head coach who's going to be working in Vegas pretty soon.
It's John Gruden money. John Gruden got 10 years for $100 million. Matt Rhule got 7 years for what could be $70 million. And it is, again, this hopeful, hope springs eternal, right? You got a new face in there. In Carolina, it's hilarious. I heard you talking about this a couple weeks ago when Ron Rivera was let go. Did Ron Rivera injure Cam Newton? Did Ron Rivera put a voodoo curse on the franchise quarterback, the whole reason that Ron Rivera was two-time coach of the year? No. Ron Rivera is a very good head coach. Arguably one of the better ones in the league. In the last 20 years, the only person to win more coach of the year awards and Ron Rivera is Bill Belichick at 3. Ron Rivera has 2. You just fired a two-time coach of the year to bring in Matt Rhule and pay him $70 million over 7 years. Now, I actually think Rhule has a really good chance to do a good job in Carolina. Any better for that sort of money. But that's kind of the point I'm getting to. The amount of pressure that he now finds on himself, and I understand it's probably not a national pressure. It's much more of a local pressure in Carolina because Carolina isn't one of those, you know, seminal programs. But you're replacing a two-time coach of the year in Ron Rivera, who I understand fans are probably reaching the end of the rope with, but it's going to be one of those cases I predict within the next 10 years. It's going to be a case of you never really knew what you had until it was gone. Lovie Smith getting fired 10-6 after the Chicago Bears. One of those situations, right? It kind of has that feeling. So you're already going to be the expectations of replacing a Ron Rivera two-time coach of the year, and then, oh, also, you now have the expectations of $70 million. So Matt Rhule is really walking into the lion's den here.
Matt Rhule is going to go to a Carolina franchise where David Tepper has made clear that he wants a baseball manager. He wants a 2020 baseball manager. He wants a guy who is going to listen to the word of the front office and implement an analytics-driven plan that is handed to him. I think that's going to be really interesting with a guy like Rhule, who not only went into Temple, cleaned it up, and then left for Baylor, and went to a Baylor program that was in the wake of the Art Briles scandal, and he, Matt Rhule, personally felt responsibility to turn that thing around. It was very clear and very outspoken about what he was going to do to turn that program around and took a lot of the responsibility on himself. I find it a very interesting hire because of that contrast. I thought Matt Rhule was the right fit for the Giants. Mm-hmm. I thought Matt Rhule should have been the head coach of the New York Giants. He had formerly been a coach for the Giants. He fit very well in New York. There was mutual interest, and if you believe the stories that were out there, the Giants settled on who the hell is Joe Judge before they gave Rhule their interview. That's another curious decision for a Giants franchise that went from Bill Parcells, then had Tom Coughlin, won Super Bowls under both those coaches. Yes, there were others in between. And now has had the illustrious crew in the past 4+ years of Ben McAdoo, everyone's favorite assistant principal. Pat Shurmur, who looked just as lost as you could possibly be, and now who in the hell is Joe Judge? So those are the hires today. That leaves the Cleveland Browns as the only franchise left to need a head coach, and that could take a while also because we're talking about putting a new GM in there as well. Off-season for the NFL, we're just about mid-season here, Ryan, for the NHL. And ESPN.com is out with its grades. Mid-season report cards for all 31 teams in the National Hockey League. And they have the Vegas Golden Knights as one of their better graded teams. Overall team grade of A-. Now, they graded them on coach, players, general manager. Then they gave him a class president, someone in danger of failing, and then overall team grade. They gave him an A-. Let's get back to that. Starts with the players. A- from ESPN.com. What do they get from Ryan McKinnell?
I think that's pretty fair. I think a B+, A-. You don't want to be too complimentary because we're we're halfway through the season. We're approaching the All-Star break. But I think a solid B+. I mean, listen, I don't know how you're going to grade them much lower than a lot of these ones that ESPN has them, because at the end of the day, they're sitting atop the Pacific Division. I think there are things, and we will get to, that you can point to that are potentially somewhat worrisome. But when you're talking about a number one team that has dealt with injuries, that is still, again, I feel like we have to bring this back around. In its third year of existence, we have been spoiled here in Vegas to be kind of tuned into winning. This team is still not supposed to theoretically be winning. So, yeah, I think A-, B-, when you look at the depth that they've had, you look at Ryan Reeves having everybody goals he has, you look at third and fourth line, you look at, and again, we will get to GM, but you look at Chandler Stephenson, you look at the way they plugged and played Stastny on the third line at different times. This has been a really good job halfway through the season by the
interesting
offense.
Part for me is the Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan breakdown talks about the forward group.
Yeah.
Talks about the goaltender, as it should. Does not mention the defense. And I think that's, for me, why I'm going to go B+ instead of A-.
Yeah.
Just because I think Marc-Andre Fleury has been exactly who you want him to be. The forward group, I think, has somehow actually overperformed here in the last month or so, especially. We're going to get to that because Max Pacioretty has been the guy that everyone hoped he would be last year. It just took a year for him to get to it this year alongside Mark Stone.
And I have to own that, because when we were doing our preseason predictions on over-under point totals, I had Pacioretty sitting under. I think his goal total was 27. I had it under. I like Max Pacioretty. I think he has one of the quickest releases in the NHL, but I didn't know if he could score consistently and be that guy that the Vegas Golden Knights had traded for him to be. Like, they wanted a marquee player, an A-plus player, a five-star player, and I wasn't sure that Pacioretty was that guy. This season, he's playing like that. And you bring up the name Mark Stone. That, and all due credit to Chandler Stephenson and anyone who's been in the middle of Pacioretty and Stone, make no mistake, Mark Stone is a huge, huge foil to Max Pacioretty and his ability to score and to be effective. And you know what, and Adam, I know I'm getting a little long here, but the one thing that I like about Stone and Pacioretty is theoretically they shouldn't be as good as they are from the standpoint of their size. Like, they are too, like, they're not categorically bruisers. You wouldn't think of Stone and Pacioretty as bruisers, but everyone always talks about Ryan Reeves, especially in my section around me, and, oh, he's so big and he's so gnarly. He's not. Ryan Reeves is a fine, he's a big guy. He's not small, right? He's not Patrick Kane. He's not Martin St. Louis. But he's also, like, when you look at Pacioretty and Stone, those are big dudes. Like, they're big, and they are doing major work in the NHL this year.
Mark Stone should be wearing the C by the end of this season. I know they don't like to do these things in season, but if Mark Stone isn't wearing the C by the time next season starts for the Vegas Golden Knights, something has gone wrong in the locker room. Wow. I know the culture has been founded without a C on anyone's sweater, but it's time for Mark Stone to have that. All right, well, before we get to our first break, let's do general manager real quick. Kelly McCrimmon gets a B+ from the ESPN crew. What do you got?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think that's about right. I think the biggest thing for me is, I mean, you look at Gusev, you look, and they mention it here in the article, you look at Miller and Hala, obviously all turning them around, who at different points were, you know, integral parts of this team. Maybe not, I mean, not the top line guys, not the most important, but, you know, specifically Colin Miller and Hala. I know Hala was dealing with his injury. For that first year and a half, they added a lot to this team. So you make those moves, and more specifically, I think, you know, the Stephenson move. Like, you've got to look at that, and you have to say that is one of the better moves that not just the offseason. So you go back to the summer after the Stanley Cup. I was going to say, not just in season, because this move was done in the middle of the season. right? Or to start the season. But you go back to the offseason, this is one of the best moves in the NHL all year. When you look at the output that Stevenson has had, and then you kind of juxtapose it to the optics of it, that once again, the Vegas Golden Knights took a player from the Washington Capitals that the Washington Capitals really didn't know how to utilize, clearly, and I'm referencing Nate Schmidt for year one that they let walk to Vegas, and now, obviously, Nate Schmidt is an integral part of this organization. And now Chandler Stevenson, who wasn't particularly an important part of the Washington Capitals, and now he comes over here as second-line center for the Vegas Golden Knights. So, GM, I would actually say A-minus. I'd bump it up a half a grade.
Tell you what I think about the job that McCrimmon and George McPhee have done in a moment. 15 minutes, we're going to talk about the New Orleans Saints with Mike Triplett, ESPN reporter as well. It's Cofield & Company on your Tuesday afternoon.
The 3 is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
Heaves one deep down the left sideline again in coverage, and it's knocked away by Jabril Wilson, incomplete. And that is it. The New York Giants have knocked off the New England Patriots 17-14 as Tom Coughlin gets a Gatorade bath. They get a final stand on the great Tom Brady. New York Giants are the Super Bowl 42 champions.
Now, back to Cofield & Company in the Findlay Toyota studio.
18-1. Yeah, Giants fans, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, Pats lovers, you know too.
Just hold on to that, buddy.
That's all I got. Candy Mac Cofield on the way here on Cofield & Company on your Tuesday afternoon. All right, Ryan and I are going to finish up our Vegas Golden Knights talk real quick before we get to a little more discussion of Tom Brady and his future with New England or maybe elsewhere. I'm going to go ahead with a B to carry forward our discussion about the front office for the Vegas Golden Knights, only because I think it's a little incomplete. We still need to see what happens at the deadline. I still think this team needs to add at least one capable top four defenseman to round out the core here. But as you said, the Chandler Stevenson acquisition has certainly worked out in the short term, and I think if you go back and you count Mark Stone as your major acquisition toward the 1920 season, then you have to give major credit to what George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon did in making that acquisition. All right, so coaching gets an A-minus from the ESPN.com crew. Talk about the defensive change they made, quoting Gerard Gallant saying, it's tough to change 20 games into the season. You want to make sure your players believe in it. It's worked out pretty well. Gallant told the, and I'm quoting this directly, Las Vegas Journal-Review, everyone's favorite local paper news.
The LRJ.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Very good paper news. So,
LJR?
Give me your...
LV, no, I can't even...
Give me your quick Gerard Gallant. They have an A-minus. A-minus works for me as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've had opinions on Gallant at different points throughout the season. We know that Gallant is a player's coach. You know, sometimes that has its negative, I guess, ramifications, but they haven't reared their ugly head this year, at least not in any sort of real way. I think at times he's a little too rah-rah-rah, and I'd like to see some more accountability. But what are you talking about? We're talking about number one in the Pacific Division. And you're talking about the guy who's been at the helm of that bench for 2.5 years now, and he's consistently done a great job. So I don't know what you could possibly dock him for.
No. And he did a great job in Florida.
Yeah.
He's done a great job with this franchise. He commands that room. He commands the bench. He basically has done everything you could have asked a first-year coach to come in and do from the outset of this franchise. And he made a tweak to a deficient area of his team in defense in the middle of this year that appears to, at least in the short term, have worked out. So that's our wrap up on the Golden Knights. But we are obligated as radio professionals to get back to talking about Tom Brady. By March 18th, if he does not work out a new deal with the Patriots, they take on a significant cap charge. Is he going to come back to New England? Ryan, should he come back to the New England Patriots?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I don't know if it's the NFL fan in me that, I mean, first of all, we've acknowledged that Tom Brady's coming back. I don't want to see him play anywhere else. I want to see, what's that old saying in Batman? Either live your, you live long enough to die the hero, or you live long enough to become the villain, or whatever the case may be, right? Like, Tom Brady, he has to die in New England. His career can't end anywhere else for me. Like, I don't want to see Johnny Unitas in the Chargers. Like, I don't want to see Joe Namath, and I don't want to see Jerry Rice with the Seahawks. You know what I mean? I want his tenure to ride out with the team that he helped build. The dynasty that he helped build. It's him and Belichick. It's their baby. And I want to see him have a fair shot. More specifically, I mean, again, not a Tom Brady apologist, but the fact remains he's the greatest quarterback to ever play. He's one of the greatest players, if not the greatest ever, to ever play in the NFL. And I still think he has it. That's a 12-4 football team we're talking about. A 12-4 football team, granted, okay, the schedule wasn't what, you know, it was for a lot of other teams. Doesn't matter. 12-4 is 12-4, and he almost won that game against the Titans. Against a team, Candy, I think you and I both agree, Titans are a much better team than the New England Patriots.
They are a much better team than the New England Patriots.
And they almost won.
And they almost won. And yeah. I think that's what you have to talk about with Bill Belichick at this point of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and Robert Kraft's dynasty is the Patriots didn't almost do anything for 15 years. They did it. And even in times when they shouldn't have done it, even when they needed Malcolm Butler to pick off Russell Wilson, even when they needed Matt Ryan to poop his pants at midfield and lose a 28-3 lead, they did it, and they didn't almost do it. And so that, for me, is the sign of Bill Belichick has made his bones on cutting bait a little too soon versus a little too late. I personally feel like it's time for them to explore what comes next beyond Tom Brady, beyond this dynasty.
It's definitely time. There's no question. In a typical team, in a typical year, in a typical season, in a typical franchise, right, that's what you would do. You would be planning for the future. The fact remains the Patriots had a chance to do that with Jimmy G. You made your bed, now you got to lie in it. And also the fact remains is Tom Brady took a really average Patriots team to a 12-4 season last year. Now, it wasn't him. He didn't have a particularly great year in terms of offensive statistics, but there are intangibles with Tom Brady, things that you can't exactly equate for. He has this magic around him, and I don't think that magic is fully used up yet, right? This is Tom Brady. He's earned the right to ride this out, and if the wheels are going to fall off Tom Brady, I want the wheels to fall off in a much more authoritative way than just a 12-4 season. I need to see under 500. I need to see a broken leg. I need to see Tom Brady weeping on the field, begging to go home to Giselle and his kids.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan. You're listening to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Tuesday afternoon in Las Vegas with Cofield and Company. Steve joins us in 15 minutes from Boise with the UNLV basketball team. Till that time, you are saddled with Mac and Candy. Ryan McKinnell, Adam Candy, Aria behind the board, keeping us sounding good. Well, we are here once again at the end of a season, Ryan McKinnell, that we thought would go a lot longer for the New Orleans Saints. Certainly thought this was a Super Bowl contending team for New Orleans, and we're now at a third consecutive year. First, the Minneapolis Miracle, then the Nickell Roby Coleman Bulldoze and no pass interference call, and now a fairly surprising overtime loss to the Minnesota Vikings for the New Orleans Saints. What's the future for this franchise? Do they have the horses to get over the hump in the playoffs? What is next for Drew Brees as his age advances and he continues to work his way back from the injury that he suffered this year? All questions that we are going to discuss right now with ESPN NFL Nation reporter Mike Triplett. He covers the New Orleans Saints day-to-day for the Four Letter. Mike, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I like that name. I just did a list of all the horrible Saints playoff exits that it also included, if you go back, Beastquake and Minneapolis Miracle, the Nickell Roby Coleman Bulldoze. I like that. We keep calling it the no call, but the Bulldoze has a little bit more of a ring to it.
Yeah, I mean, the no-call seems to be the after effect. The bulldoze, I think, is what we all saw with our own eyes in that situation. Mike, being a talking head on sports radio dictates that I must ask you something that comes with a somewhat ginned-up controversy in the first place. So I have to ask you about the Kyle Rudolph situation at the end of the game and the no-call on the offensive pass interference. What has been the discussion around the Saints over the last couple of days about that? I wouldn't think it would hit quite as hard as the bulldoze, as we're now calling it, but what have you heard?
No, you know, it has not. I don't think that'll be a controversy that lasts. I think an offensive pass interference call might have bailed them out, and we do have this new rule in place to be able to go back and look at those things. So maybe they could have called it, and if you had to say, was it more than 50% likely that he actually pushed off, I think people would agree yes. But we've gotten used to what this rule is, and this rule is, you know, it has to be 99% to get overturned. So I honestly didn't expect it to get overturned, and it was not a big thing that the Saints were pointing to after the game, like nowhere near like they were 1 year ago today.
So to follow up on that idea, where they were a year ago today was essentially walking into the Super Bowl, right? We can talk about how things played out after that, but at a team that for the last three seasons has had very realistic Super Bowl aspirations. You know, over in baseball, Mike, I know Brian Cashman, the GM of the Yankees, likes to say, you know what, you put your team in the best position to get to the postseason, and then there's just a lot of crapshoot element once you actually get there. Is there some sense of that with this New Orleans team, that this has been a Super Bowl team for the last 3 years, but circumstances, some in their control, some out of their control, just haven't let it happen?
Well, no question, and I think this season sort of amplifies why the bulldoze was so heartbreaking, was because you can be a really good team and you can go 13-3 and get stuck with the 3 seed and have to play in the wild card round and not have your best day and lose in the first round against a Minnesota team that was just on fire in the front seven. We don't do this like college football where we rank them at the end of the season. You can be one of the best teams and get beat, you know, if you have to play 3 games. So when you're, you know, leading the NFC Championship game and in position to win an NFC Championship game with minutes to go, you know, so many people, I've heard it for a year, oh, well, the Saints lost that game for a bunch of other reasons. Well, of course, there's a lot of ways you can lose football games and a lot of ways you can miss going to the Super Bowl. The Saints almost got there last year. But it's really hard to get there. So you can be a team as good as they've been 3 years in a row, and they understand more than most teams how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl. Every team understands that except for the New England Patriots. So it's tough. It really is tough. And it's really tough when Drew Brees is about to turn 41 next week and the salary cap is about to get slammed with that 2017 draft class that has Alvin Kamara and Marshawn Lattimore and Ryan Ramczyk, to know that these are their best shots at it. And so every time they miss one of these shots, it hurts.
And, Mike, you talk about this being, you know, potentially one of those last shots. I'm really curious, what's the feel around the city? What's it like in New Orleans right now? Is it sadness? Is it anger? How are you gauging the fan base right now?
Well, yeah, all those things. I mean, and obviously they're finding different things to get ticked off at. I mean, you see on sure. social media, a lot of people complaining about how they use their timeouts at the end. You know, the healthy contingent of people saying Drew Brees needs to go now because he had his first 2 turnover game of the season at the wrong time. And there's a lot of, I mean, it's tough. It's tough because everybody knows they have that weight on them that we only get so many cracks at this. It's not like they have Pat Mahomes or Lamar Jackson at quarterback. You know, they have a team that only gets so many shots at this. But this year, I think it's a little easier to cope with because this was sort of gradual. I mean, you could feel it coming for a few weeks that they were going to get stuck with the number 3 seed unless they got a lot of help. And then right away from the start of this Minnesota game, they were trailing early, and it looked like a matchup that wasn't going their way. So they had time to ease into a little. Not that that makes it better, But as we talked about with the Saints' playoff history, they have so many. They were winning, and then shocking ending. This one, at least, they had time to come to grips with their fears that this might not be the year.
We're with Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the New Orleans Saints. Mike, as we're kind of talking, you referenced, right, the fans being upset with that clock management at the end of the game. I guess there's two ways to look at it, right? The fact that, yeah, you didn't manage the clock correctly and it ran out. Flip side of that is there is, to play devil's advocate, the case of leaving too much time on the clock. So I'm curious. No one knows this team better than you. You are boots on the ground. You know them as well as anyone. When you look at the way that end of that game played out, specifically in the, you know, in the kind of vein of the clock management, I'm curious, what was your take on it?
Well, this has been my big. You can go on my Twitter account today if you want to watch me go back and forth with a bunch of fans on it. And I do not defend what the Saints did by any means, because it obviously did not work out for them. In retrospect, they should have called timeout with like 2:45 left, made the Niners punt and get the ball back with 2.5 minutes left and no timeouts. I mean, that's obviously what they should have done since they ran out of time. But it was only 4 weeks ago when they were playing the 49ers, and they marched down and scored so quickly that they took a one-point lead over the 49ers, 46-45, in that back-and-forth shootout, that the entire fan base was up in arms that they left the 49ers with too much time on the clock, and the Niners came back and kicked the game-winning field goal. So you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. What they did in this case was they left themselves with 1 minute, 55 seconds to go, one timeout left, and they did quickly march down into field goal range. And if you're only settling for the field goal, I mean, if they had kicked the game-tying field goal with like 1:10 remaining, they'd be getting killed for leaving Minnesota 1:10 to go back and kick a game-winning field goal. So obviously they should have called the timeout sooner in hindsight, but while I was watching that game live, I never thought, oh my God, what are they doing? Why are they only leaving themselves with 2 minutes and one timeout? I thought that was going to be enough.
Mike, Drew Brees went through one of the more interesting seasons I can remember for any elite NFL player in terms of the roller coaster we rode with who is Drew Brees at this age. You know, he opens up on fire, 370 yards on Monday Night Football against Houston, then the thumb injury. He comes back after missing 6 weeks from that thumb injury, and we start to ask questions about can he still push the ball down the field. Then we go through another phase where all of a sudden he looks like the Drew Brees we've seen for a number of years, and then things faded a little bit, at least by the analytics and so on, toward the end of the season. So what is the evaluation that the Saints are going to make now on Drew Brees as he hits this age and he hits free agency?
Well, I would correct you on one point. Well, first of all, his entire year has been really fascinating, because a year ago at this time, he really faded down the stretch. He had a really rough December and a rough playoffs last year. And so we kind of did spend the entire offseason being like, you know, are we finally seeing the age creep in with Drew Brees? That was not the case, though, at the end of this season. His December was about as good of a month of football as he's ever had in 19 seasons. He threw 15 touchdown passes with zero interceptions in December. He was that in week 15. He completed 29 of 30 passes on Monday Night Football against the Colts. He was named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month for December, and he finished the year with the best passer rating of his career. And then he did struggle in the playoff game. But yeah, pretty much everything he did during this season was terrific. After he came back from the thumb surgery, I think it was 25 touchdowns versus 2 interceptions. So there are a lot of reasons to think he can keep doing this forever. The playoff performance is a little disappointing. It's the second straight time that he ended on kind of a sour note, which is rare for him, because he also, you know, had some struggles in that Rams playoff last year. But the one thing that he's done as he's gotten older is he's gotten more efficient. He has now set the NFL record for completion percentage. The top three completion percentages in NFL history are Drew Brees over the last 3 years. And he's also had his three lowest interception totals the last 3 years. So as he's losing things like the deep ball and the 5,000-yard seasons, he's gaining in efficiency. And I think as long as he wants to keep playing, he's got to be your quarterback. Even if that means letting Teddy Bridgewater go to another team, Brees has just proven that he's at least a top 10 quarterback, if not more than that.
I think we can definitely agree on the fact that overall, on balance, a fantastic season for Drew Brees. He's Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the New Orleans Saints. I am not charging any royalties on Bulldoze. It's all yours. Appreciate your time, man.
Around here, it'll always be known as the no call, but I like Bulldoze. It's too bad you didn't jump on the scene.
You know, just a year late, as always, in my life, so thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Mike Triplett. Steve Cofield joins us in just a moment, so, you know, take that as you will. Cofield and Company on Tuesday afternoon.
Finley Toyota in the Valley Auto Mall has the largest Toyota service facility in Nevada. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota studio.
Cofield and Company on your Tuesday afternoon. Ryan McKinnell, Adam Candy, and live from the Gem State, our gem, our shiny, happy man, Steve Cofield joining us up with the UNLV basketball team. How you doing, man?
What's up, guys?
Oh, hanging in there, man. Just another day in paradise.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting back into the NFL. We're going to get to First Take and what they said this morning. As Stephen A. had an epic rant. So lots to talk about who's been hired to this point, who hasn't been hired, who hasn't even been interviewed. But that's coming up in like 10 minutes. What'd you guys get out of the Saints convo? I was actually surprised that Mike Triplett said there are a handful of Saints fans who are mad at Drew Brees and want to move on. Seriously, Saints fans?
Don't we see this when the overreaction? And I always question, Steve, how much of this is social media induced from the few goofballs out there who post a video or a jersey burning or who make a statement and then it gets amplified. I'd like to believe, right, that it's either trolls, non-Saints fans who are trying to stir the pot, or everyone under 16. Like that, I've clearly forgotten what the Saints were before Drew Brees arrived, and what Drew Brees just did about a decade ago. So I hope that's not the truth.
Final two games of Drew Brees' regular season, he had his two worst completion percentages of the year. Granted, one of them was 71%, but against Carolina, he went 19 of 30. So, and then we saw what happened in the wild card game. So I understand where Mike was coming from in saying that he finished strong and was the December player of the month, but I think if you look inside some of the throws for Brees in that last couple of weeks, it at least gives you enough pause that you ask yourself, okay, how long of a contract do we want to do with Drew Brees? Do we want to try to get this for 1 year? Do we want to go year by year at the age he's at? Or are we comfortable giving him 2 or 3 years and saying, like Brady, he's one of these guys who is going to defy age and keep on pushing? So, no, I'm not with the Saints fans who say it's time to get rid of him. That's insane. But I also think you need to ask some realistic questions about just how long can this go on.
What do you think, Ryan? 2 or 3 years?
No.
Is that too much?
It would definitely be too much. And I don't think Drew Brees, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for Drew Brees. I don't know him, but I would like to think he always seems like a level-headed guy. He's never really struck me as a clout chaser or a paycheck, like a bottom-line guy. I would like to think that he would understand, hey, I'm 41. I know what the expectations are of a man at this age, of a quarterback of this age. I mean, I'm living in the era of Tom Brady, but you can't obviously use him as the measuring stick because that's just, you know, ridiculous. I think, yeah, two or three years would be way too much. I still think Drew Brees has a good run left in him. I still think the Saints team is constructed to where that they can be a threat and they can be in the Super Bowl next year and potentially win it. I'll say this, 3 years, absolutely not. If you want to do two and you do it as a tip of the cap and an acknowledgement for everything that Drew Brees has done to your organization, being your greatest player ever, winning you a Super Bowl, being arguably one of the top three greatest quarterbacks ever, you do it as a legacy push and you do it as a wink and a nod and you hope that Saints Nation, they understand why you did it. But 3 years, absolutely not. Two, if you absolutely have to do it. But I think one's the right move, yeah?
Yeah, I would do three.
He got
hurt this last year, but, you know, it wasn't, I don't think, an old man injury. He's coming off two seasons where he played 26 games and he threw 59 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. Unless he has some catastrophic injury, He can play until he's 43.
I guess, but what would the reasoning, Steve, be of 3 years? Like, why, if you're the GM,
because he's better than the next option.
But well,
do they
no,
have
but
someone lined
you
up.
Think
to be their
he's
next quarterback?
You think he's going to leave if you don't give him three? What I'm trying to understand is
no,
why
I'd give him a 2 year deal, right, with an option for a third.
Okay,
I'm saying, but my plans, I would plan on Drew Brees being around for a few more years, and I would have no issue giving him 2 years and a third with an option, as long as he's playing
okay.
At age 42 and a half. Then you go with him. He had a great year, except for the injury. I mean, this year alone, he had 27 touchdowns,
oh, I agree,
and 4 interceptions.
Yeah.
He completed nearly 75% of his passes in the last 2 years.
Listen, he did great things, but I think you also have to look at the middle of the Saints season and say, how much is the machine and how much is the man pulling the levers? Because the New Orleans Saints went 5-0 with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm.
They have a really good team.
You know, I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater is the solution to everything, but Sean Payton said today he wants to keep all three of those QBs together. He wants Breeze and Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater. And I think when you put the whole thing together, you might read in between that a bit and say that I don't know that Sean Payton's ready to go 3 years with Drew Breeze either.
Yeah, I don't think they can keep Bridgewater, though. There's going to be too much interest. Someone's going to give him, you know, a 3 year deal for 17 a year. He makes eight now. He's the highest paid backup. He's not staying around to be a backup for two or three more years. That's not going to happen.
Not likely, considering the amount of teams that are going to be in the QB market this year. I mean, I'm sure if $8 million is going to be the going price, Ryan McKinnell's going to dig into his vast fortune and make sure that he fronts at least half of that to get Teddy to the Chicago Bears.
I would give a pinky to get Teddy Bridgewater to the Chicago Bears.
Now, if your point is they could do it without paying a quarterback, that the machine is so good they could do it without paying a quarterback, say like $66 million for the next 2 years, that you're worried about cost and the budget, then I'll listen to that, but not based on ability.
What about getting the most of this great offense with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara? Yes, you can roll the dice and say, does Drew Brees have three more years in him? Yeah, potentially. Two more years? Yeah, potentially. But does this offense have three more years, is the way it's currently constructed? So the Saints have a lot of difficult decisions that they got to make this offseason.
This part of the show is brought to you by our buddy Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today, 577-2600. He's helped thousands of clients get the best home loan possible and then refinance into a better one. You need a second opinion on a quote you have now or need to finally get that mortgage tune-up done, call Dustin DeHart, 577-2600. So I'm on the road tomorrow, Mountain West Conference action. UNLV is at Boise State. Did you guys see the story with yet another case of where the NCAA comes in and acts like the fun police, according to Jeff Grammer, who covers New Mexico for the Albuquerque Journal and is one of the great writers who covers the Mountain West Conference? He says in June, Utah State asked if it would be okay to have a promotion with a local store because they wanted to do something with Justin Bean, their sophomore forward, and a dude who comes off the bench, Diogo Brito. They wanted to have a Bean Brito night. Tie it to the players. Get sponsorship. NCAA said no.
This is my shocked face that you can all see on
like,
radio.
It's like we're all kind of sitting here.
It's all super, super scrunched all on my face. I just can't believe this happened. Look, I can't give you fake outrage. I don't have any left. But what I can say is that congratulations for this being the single most interesting thing to happen in Logan, Utah since ever.
It's like, and I don't know, like I'm going to sit here just looking at Candy. I mean, I've used up all my rage, but you know how I feel about the NCAA. It's a joke. It's a joke. And this is just another little notch. I mean, it's not as big as some of the other things that I've railed on and had a problem with, but it's just another notch in the belt of stupid that the NCAA continues to lap on.
Now, they followed this up, Utah State did, and asked the NCAA if they could sell Justin Bean and Diogo Brito jerseys on the concourse of the arena with their names on the back, and they said, of course they can, yes.
Exactly. Yes.
And we get our cut, too.
Yes.
You guys can make all the money you want off their names.
Cha-ching!
With their jerseys.
I still got my Ray Allen UConn jersey, and I still got my Allen Iverson number 3 Georgetown jersey. I bought them when they were Ray Allen 34 and Allen Iverson number 3. I bought them because of their players, and that was 25 years ago. So, yeah, Steve, point made.
This is going to change eventually, right?
Yes.
Like something like this?
Yes.
This seems like an easy one. Hell, if you – I mean, I guess you could go next level. I don't know why you'd have to. I guess you could go next level Now, you know what? I'm not even going to make the suggestion that it should be for charity. Screw that.
Right. So don't player, don't the try next... to make – yeah, yeah.
No, no, because they should be able to do promotions like this. Yeah. Maybe the players even get a cut of it. It shouldn't be maybe. They should get a cut of it. And it's something fun. And you're solving the issue, because the issue is going to arise here in the next couple of years. The money spigot is not going to be flowing as hard and steady as it has been. It's just things are going to change in college sports. They're going to be looking for different ways to make money.
And that's a great point. Then you have to wonder how much of the last 30 years of, as you put it, the fun police, how much of instances like this. Again, it's not the notch in the belt, but it's another small notch in a belt full of notches. And you just have to wonder when how many people like me, Steve. I mean, I grew up with Notre Dame season basketball tickets. I watched Jamal Mashburn and Allen Iverson and Ray Allen. Like, I loved college sports for the longest time until I didn't. Until I didn't. And I wonder how many other people are going to get on that side of things.
Yeah, almost no one.
Well, okay. Yeah,
I think most hardcores don't pay attention to stuff like this.
Oh,
I think the big wokes like yourself pay attention, and which is admirable. It's fine. You still watch, though.
No.
I mean, you don't watch Notre Dame basketball and football anymore?
I do, because it's Notre Dame, and I was raised in South Bend, and it carries a little bit. But, I mean, I love March Madness. We've talked about it. I love the chaos of it. I love the amount of games. I love the morning-to-night factor of it. I love the gimmick that is essentially March Madness. But as far as me keeping up with the top talent, I don't care who the number one pick is. That's what DeAndre Ayton, I don't care. That's what I used to. That used to be everything when I was growing up. I don't care because I don't like watching them being slaves for these organizations that are making millions of dollars off of them while they're getting nothing in return. So, yeah, it was a strong shift for me, and it's changed the way I watch college sports. Do I still watch it? Yes. As much as I did in the past? Absolutely not.
Let me finish on this in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll also get to what Stephen A. said this morning with our feature every day at 4 o'clock, the first take, Vegas take.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.